Hey, it's Maz. Are you tired of small inconveniences that always turn into big headaches at home? Well, my friends at Rodenizer Home Services can make small fixes like repairing leaky faucets, adding or replacing electrical outlets and lights, or clearing slow drains that will provide big comfort for your home. And with over 10,000 five-star reviews, Rodenizer's expert technicians are just a call away and ready to fix those inconveniences at your home. Experience the difference with Rodenizer Home Services. Visit Rodenizer.com to schedule today. That's Rodenizer Home Services. Nice people, great service since 1928.
Welcome to the sidelines. We are back. I'm Matt Dolliff. I'm here with Ty Anderson once again. If you're a listener to this podcast, a fan of the podcast, you heard us the other night talking about the Bruins wallowing in our misery for about 20, 30 minutes. And you'll get us again after the next Tampa game coming up. We're going to keep doing those Bruins post-game shows. It's pretty fun. Pretty fun to talk some hockey, offer some immediate thoughts. And before we get too far in the thing, I just want to let you know, if you're listening, you're a fan of this podcast, please go rate us in whatever wherever you listen to your podcast. 5 stars only, of course. And maybe leave a nice review if you want. Or a bad one. I don't care. I'd like to see more ratings and reviews on our thing. Shout out to Hardy Forrester, who left a very nice comment for us. We apparently have a listener in Germany, based on the analytics. So thank you, as long as that's not a bot or something. Or someone with a weird IP address. Thank you, German listener. We appreciate you listening. And before we get to the sports, Ty, I need to clear something up with you because there's been something that I keep thinking about from time to time, and I just think about it and start laughing. It was a meme that you posted on Instagram, and it was Winnie the Pooh eating from what he thought was a jar of honey, but it was really like I forget what it was, and then the Tigger told him no, and then he said oh, ball though, but it got me so bad because he was eating something absolutely. Do you remember what it was?
Yeah, he was eating Tigger's father's ashes.
That's my father. He died of cancer. Oh, ball though.
Yeah. Yeah, I find these really dark memes sometimes, and I just love to share them.
That's like the perfect reaction for a Winnie the Pooh meme, though. Got me so bad. Okay.
You responded to my other one today, which is this new account that I love just called Effin' Birds. It's just birds.
Right, yeah.
It's just birds just swearing.
It was like a pigeon literally just sitting there saying fuck this shit or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Less sense it makes, the funnier it is to me. That's how I usually like it with memes. Yeah, I actually subscribe to both of those channels. I need more meme channels in my life. You know, I'm trying to up my meme game myself, so I need some people I can rip off. So
that's the only kind of pages I like to follow on Instagram, honestly, are just joke ones, because everything else is too damn serious.
Yeah.
If you have multiple apps that are too serious, your whole life is serious. So you gotta be silly. So
people on social media, yeah, too serious. Find some memes and lighten the fuck up. That's what I say to people. No sense of humor. All right, thanks for clearing that up. All right, well. This is the first week in a long time that there's a bunch of sports going on, which is good. We did like 2 episodes before the coronavirus lockdown, and then we did a bunch, before the sports came back. Now they're back in full swing. We got to see the old TV presentations, and I gotta say, I'm a fan of the NBA and NHL presentations. I know Mr. Dave Portnoy got in trouble. Well, he didn't get in trouble, but he got pushback because he said he couldn't really get into it because it feels like the preseason. And I sort of see what he's saying, because it's just not the same without fans in the crowd. But I just think for what they have to work with, the NBA and the NHL have done a really, really good job. And I was skeptical about the fake crowd noise. I was like, are we really that – our brains can't handle silence? Well, then once I realized that they weren't going to mic up the players or anything like that, it's like, all right, give me the fake crowd noise. And it's good to have that ambiance in the background. And I think covering up the empty seats, it was a good deal. And, yeah, I think it's fine. I mean, as long as it puts more focus on what's going on the ice, on the court, which, like, not that you're watching the fans either way, but I don't know. I like the presentation. What do you think of that shit?
So I actually really like the NBA's look. I like the digital backdrops. If only because it allows you to have some creativity with the crowds. I thought it was funny. I think the Lakers game that I watched, Lakers-Clippers game, I think they had the fans sitting like the fake fans, like sitting like 6 feet apart. And I was like, oh, that's a funny little touch to it. With the NHL, I'm noticing that I enjoy this part, is that I've been watching games, and if a big save happens or a near goal happens, whatever, I hear the noise and I go, is that the crowd? Is that are those the benches, or are they pumping in a little bit of crowd noise here? I like that I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, I like that it's not like, oh, here's a bunch of fake. You know, like with the baseball games, it's very noticeable that it is piped in noise, obviously.
Baseball has done a terrible job. That's why I didn't even bring them up yet.
Yeah, but with the NHL, I'm noticing that it feels, if they are doing any sort of noise, adding any noise beyond the goal horns and the let's go Pens chants that you heard piped in last night.
Yeah,
it feels natural. You know, it's not over the top. It's not completely artificial. And that was my big concern. You know, you can't really replicate the oohs and ahs of a crowd during a playoff hockey game because hockey moves such a fast pace that it's always going to be delayed.
Definitely not.
You know, I like what they've done so far. What about you?
I noticed in the Bruins Flyers game that they did like a little bit of the home presentation, like they played Zombie Nation when the Bruins scored, and I assume they had the same like goal horn as the Flyers do when they scored. So that I think is pretty cool. I mean, not that I know like everybody's like how it is at everybody's home arena, but I thought I like that touch. You know, it gives a little familiarity to it.
Yeah, and that's you know, I guess that they are gonna do, you know, when it's a Bruins playoff game, they're not doing it for the round robins, but when they're doing it for the actual playoff games, the Bruins, when they are the home team, they will come out to Cochise by Audioslave. There probably will be crazy train. Like, they're going to have their presentation represented.
Ty's going to die a little inside virtually.
Exactly. but for these games, it's sort of, I guess they're mixing them up. But my understanding is that they will have those Boston specific things happening when the Bruins are the home team in the postseason.
Yeah, I thought the virtual, like the virtual real people being presented in the NBA stands, I thought was way better than what Fox Sports is trying to do with just like the CGI video game fans. Like, get that out of my face! You're creeping me the fuck out. This isn't WCW Revenge. Like, and it's baseball to begin with. Like, the whole thing sucks with what they were doing at the baseball games. I think it's not. I mean, it's obviously not going to be totally realistic, but I think the only way to make the NBA fans more realistic is to have everybody wearing a mask, and then have the one guy who's not wearing a mask, and then have one fan pull out his phone, record the guy, and then the guy will spit back in his face and say, "You're infringing all my freedom," and then they'll beat the shit out of him and throw a beer in his face. Then the cops won't show up, and then everybody will leave unhappy. I think that's the only way to make it totally realistic. But I think the NBA is doing a good job overall with their presentation. It reminds me of Monday Night Raw, you know, like with the giant entryway and the video screens and all that shit. So maybe that's why I gravitate towards it, because I grew up on those shows.
Yeah, I don't like I'm with you. I don't like the fake people. It reminds me of playing NBA 2K3 or something like that. Like, just the way they look, it's very video game-esque, which, I mean, it's great if you – you know, want that, but I don't want that. It's weird. It looks strange.
They should just go the extra step with it, and when a guy does a dunk, they put a Sega Genesis fire effect behind him, and have a go, boom, shakalaka, you know?
Well, that's what I said that, actually, that for one of these games, the crowd backdrop should be the NBA Jam crowd. Why not? And then if you press turbo a bunch of times in a row, your head gets huge. That's great. I like that. Let's do that. Make it happen.
I thought I saw that. I thought they had some fans like putting themselves in big head mode. Maybe it was just a weird looking. Maybe the aspect ratio was all off. They were just distorted.
Yeah.
But Celtics won the other night. Bruins played like shit and lost. So the results on the court, on the ice, have been mixed. But Bruins getting back
to
action. What's that?
You like that we have like months and months without these teams playing games. And the second game back, they're like, Bruins 3, Celtics at 3:30. It's like, oh my God, can we stop with this? Please. Can I get a break from this?
Yeah. I immediately thought of you when I was looking at the schedule. I was like, we're still doing this shit. We gotta split the duties covering these games. I mean, it's no big deal to me, because I have been covering basketball for 12 years. I won 3 Pulitzer Prizes covering the NBA. I taught Adrian Wojnarowski how to write a lead, so I'm eminently comfortable pivoting to basketball and covering the Celtics, but you know, I definitely know a little bit more about hockey for sure, because that's the game I truly grew up on. My dad put skates on me when I was three, you know.
I stole skates when I was three. That's the difference between me and you.
You say you stole skates?
Stole them. No, I didn't really do that. I should have, though. Maybe it would be better.
Don't go back in time and cancel Ty because he stole some kids' skates. Please just don't.
You know that, by the way, I'm finally, for the first time in my life, wearing skates that fit me. Do you know this? Did I tell you about this?
No, what do you mean? How did you why would you put up with skates that don't fit you?
Well, because we didn't have, you know, a lot of money. Just find whatever skates I could find.
Okay, that's understandable.
And so, you know, I went out and I dug my rollerblades out of my my parents' house and you know, I put them on and I was skating and I was like, these feel loose. I was like, you know, I was like, these feel really loose. And so I kind of like I did the laces again. I like tightened some stuff and I was like, okay, these are still really loose. I looked at the size and they're meant for a size 11 and a half shoe. I wear a size 9 shoe. So two and a half sizes away from what it is. But I would just wear like hockey socks and like multiple like pairs of socks when I was growing up wearing them, wearing those skates. So I was like, oh, whatever. So for the first time in my life, I now own street hockey skates that actually fit me.
So you had Bozo the Clown skates before.
Basically. And now I'm going to be like, wow, this is how skating should feel. But my ice skates, I think typically fit fine. I haven't played ice in so long. It's been a while. Cause you know, everyone's older now. No one's like, hey, let's go play, you know, 12 PM stick practice at, you know, Stoneham rink. I mean, I'm the only person who can really do that. My friend group. So it's kind of like, you know, I'm going to go do that by myself. No, thanks.
Yeah. So I got a bum knee. There's kids shitting himself. Not like us. We're a couple of children in adult bodies right now.
True.
Just want to do some stick practice.
Yeah.
I'll go with you. We'll go. I need to get new skates, though. I don't know if I ever wore skates that fit either, because I didn't really discover until recently that I need wide-fitting shoes. So I don't know if it's the same thing with skates, if there's like wide-fit and regular-fit. I don't even know, because I haven't actually had to buy skates in years.
Yeah, now you can cook the skates and they just fit to your feet perfectly.
Oh, I actually remember that. Someone used to do that trick. Oh, no, we used to do that trick with the stick blade. So we would have like an illegal banana blade.
Mm-hmm.
Just whip like 90-mile-an-hour wrist shots.
You do have a good shot.
I had a laser rocket wrist shot. That was the only thing I was good at. Yeah. And I was a creative passer. I had Mark Savard-esque passing skills. And a Joe Sakic-esque wrist shot, and everything else was an absolute disaster. That was basically me as a hockey player. Never now and then, if someone pissed me off, I could dish out a good hit, but that was basically it.
Yeah. Nothing. I honestly, there's nothing I like more than a nice saucer pass between a defender's legs and two. The forward who can score the goal much better than I ever could. That was like my ultimate feeling. It's just
I never figured out the saucer pass, but I love passing between people's legs. I like clowning people that way.
Yes, it's the best way to go.
Yeah. So anyway, well, a real hockey team is getting to work tomorrow night. Bruins take on Tampa, and I think you tweeted about this last night, but you texted me about it too. That the Tampa Washington game yesterday was basically the worst possible result. The Bruins, which I forgot about this, but they're actually doing regular season rules in the round robin. Mm-hmm. And so they have shootouts. So Tampa and Washington each got a point yesterday. And was it Tampa that got the extra point because Kucherov and someone else scored in the No, was it Washington?
No, it was Tampa. Tampa got goals from Kucherov and...
Who was the other one? Someone with skill. Oh, no, I'm thinking of TJ Oshie that scored, but someone else... scored for Tampa.
Yeah, Tampa won it 2-1.
Whatever. Yeah, they won. They won in the shootout, and regardless, worst possible result. Could you explain to the people, because you can do it better than me, why this was the worst possible result for the Bruins?
All right. So, in layman's terms, the simplest way to break it down is the Boston Bruins can max out at 4 points in the round robin play, assuming they win their next two games. The Capitals can max out at 5 points. And the Lightning can max out, and Lightning Flyers can max out at 6 points. Basically, you need help now. You need a lot of help. And if you lose on if you lose Wednesday's game against the Lightning, it's over. Like, you Lightning have 4 points. You cannot catch them. You can now max out at 2 points. So you are now looking at probably being 3 or 4, which if Pittsburgh gets their head on right, that's Pittsburgh. You know, you'd probably play Pittsburgh in the first round, which if you remember those games this year, they weren't horrible, but they weren't great either.
And if,
yeah, exactly. And so that's a problem for the Bruins, I think. And basically now it's you need the Flyers to lose at least one of their games, and you need to win your next two to have a chance at maintaining the number one seed, because the Bruins would have a tiebreaker. If everyone has 4 points, you know, they'll all be fine. The Bruins will have number one seed, but they need help, and they need to take care of business against two teams that they have struggled against over the last two seasons in the Lightning and the Capitals.
Yeah, I mean, well, you could say they struggled against the Capitals. I think the last two seasons, it's been a little closer to even between the Bruins and the Lightning. Is that fair to say?
Between the Bruins and Lightning or Bruins and Capitals?
Bruins and Lightning have been closer to even than before, when they got crushed in five games in that 2018 series.
It's been closer, but I think still the Lightning have taken like 6 out of the last 9. I want to say.
Jesus Christ.
It's still advantage Tampa, even with this. You know, it's been closer, yeah.
But Tampa, Mike!
Those two teams looked fantastic yesterday. They looked ready for postseason play.
Okay, I only saw the third period, and I thought the third period was kind of boring. And then they said that this has been an absolute treat on the. So I was like, all right, I missed something. So they both look ready to go, which the Bruins did not.
That's yeah, I look at the energy. I look at the energy levels of each team. They were ready to play off the jump. They, you know, they didn't look like they'd been resting for the last 4 months. I thought Tampa was just forcing the issue against Washington's blue line for the first half of the game, and Washington tightened up and they were answering physically. A lot of things that you'd want to see after having 4.5 months off, and a lot of things we did not see from the Bruins in either the exhibition against Columbus or Sunday's loss against Philadelphia. So. Big test here, these next two games.
Yeah, Brad Marchand talked about, he said, like, you know, I'm not worried about how we play in the last two games. It's going to be fine. It's like, no, like, I don't want him to say we're worried. Like, he said the right thing, but I mean, you gotta get your asses in gear at some point. Like you can't, like, you know, let another team skate around with the Stanley Cup in their building and be like, yeah, you know, it's fine. Not worried.
Yeah. I think that ultimately they want to just get the combination set for these next two games, and if they are the 4 seed, you know, whatever. But there are things you need to get taken care of here. Like, you just need to. It's just, you know, I really don't want to – if I'm the Bruins, I don't want to enter game one of the Stanley Cup Finals going, well, we have a first line and a fourth line. Everything else we'll figure out on the fly. Like, no, you need to have one of these lines taken care of. Because if you don't, again, it's the same thing we saw last year where they're a one-line team hoping for power play opportunities. And that's not a recipe for success this time around. It's just not.
Do you think moving Jake DeBrus down to the third line or something might help? And maybe, I don't know, move Bjork up to the second line? Because I don't know. It feels like they have two third lines right now.
So I think that DeBrus has been better with Coyle this year than he has with Krejci. And I don't know why that is the case, but it's just the case that the Krejci-DeBrus combination hasn't been there this year for whatever reason. They do not look on the same page. They're out of sync. So today's practice, you had DeBrusque and Bjork with Coyle, which is great. But kind of makes your second line look like a third line. Now you have Richie, Krejci, and it looks like Carson Kuhlman for tomorrow.
Okay, DJ Bean had tweeted that exact thing earlier today. So that's okay. Okay, that makes sense. So I was like, okay, oh, God, is that what the line is? Because I didn't see what the lines were.
And so I don't love that combination on that second line. The Krejci-Richie combo hasn't really been there either. Like, it wasn't bad, but they didn't look like, oh, this is a definite fit right now. And then, you know, Kuhlman's going to work hard, but does he give you enough scoring pop there? You know, so now we're looking at it, and we're looking at it like, okay, now Kuhlman is your number one shooting threat on that line. I don't know if that's what you want right now.
Yeah, I mean, the way Coyle has been playing and the way he played last year, he really has been like the number two center, and that's been like really the true number two line going back to last year's playoffs. So I don't know, maybe they look at DeBrusque, Coyle, you said DeBrusque, Coyle, Bjork, maybe, I mean, that just name one names alone, like that sounds like a real that sounds like their actual second line anyway. But I mean, I don't know if that's not reflected in the ice time. I guess there's no use talking about that. But I mean, yeah, Coyle I thought looked good, and I mean he looks good with Bjork, so I don't really want to break those two up. But I don't know. Hopefully it sparks them. Hopefully DeBrusk gets a spark, and you know Krejci hasn't really looked like the same guy that we were used to seeing earlier in his career in the playoffs. Going back to last year, I think so.
Yeah, and watching him on Sunday, I thought he was. I mean, he was. I thought he was one of the worst players on Sunday. I really did. I didn't think he played well at all.
He's at his best when he's ahead. When he's thinking ahead of the play, he looked like he was a little behind, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, there was one play in particular where I was like, he's not even close to being where they need him to be right now. But again, that whole line's been out of sync, I thought. I think, again, that goes back to what I was just saying. The DeBrusk-Krejci combo hasn't been all that great. And Stadnica is now looking like the healthy scratch. Didn't play a ton on Sunday. Wasn't in the rotation to begin the third period when they're down by two goals. So do the math there. He's out. Richie goes in. And now you're going to see what happens here. But this comes back to what I was talking about last week with you need Kasha in there. You need to figure out what he can do and where he slides in, because he might be the guy, or they're hoping he's the guy that balances out this middle six grouping, where you don't have to load up. You're not loading up the Coyle line and killing Krejci's line, or vice versa.
Yeah, you got to hope Kasha turns into this year's version of Marcus Johansson, who was one of their best forwards last year, and it's basically like the same role or whatever. Can you hear me? Okay.
Yeah, I got you.
Okay, I was hearing like feedback or something. Hopefully the recording turns out okay. We'll see. So looking at Tampa, I'm not as worried about their lineup as I was 2 years ago. Like, you really can't look at Tampa like they're playing the same exact team that they did 2 years ago. Because first and foremost, Steven Stamkos is not going to play. At least I believe that's what I saw. Is that true? Stamkos still not ready to come back?
That's the word out of there, is that he's not.
I wonder if the Felger and Maz of Tampa are shitting down Steven Stamkos' throat right now.
Who is this?
Captain Poopy Pants over there! What is... Right? Yeah, like, he got injured in training camp, or, like, right before training camp. That's not good. Not good.
No, that's always... The captain. I mean, that's him all the time. You know, that's I mean... It's tough. Like, yeah, we've talked about it before, but I'm not a big. I can't believe in Tampa anymore. I'm Charlie Brown with the football. I can't do it anymore. Like, it's just, I refuse to allow myself to buy in on Tampa. So what I'll say is this: is that what scares me about Tampa and Washington, for that matter, is both Vasilevsky and Holtby looked pretty good, and when those guys are on their game, they are two big goaltenders that take away angles and make you have to score some pretty greasy goals, some difficult goals, and that's what worries me about this Bruins team. Is I don't know if they can do that right now. It's just, it seems like they're forcing the issue. So if they can get back to their structure and their system and battle through the bad ice and battle through all the other bullshit, I like their chances. But if they're still going to make these crazy cross ice low percentage passes and hope to hit on these Hail Mary plays, they're not going to score on these guys. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah. No, I for one am not worried about Sean Corrali and Chris Wagner being your top scoring pair. You know, I like that. Let's make them the number one line and put them out there against Braden Point and Nikita Kucherov. That sounds ideal. Looking at the defense is still what scares me about Tampa, because that's really what sort of clamped down on them in the series 2 years ago. Still have Hedman. They still have McDonough. They're a little different now because they have I'm just looking at daily faceoff lines. I assume this is up to date. They have Zach Bogosian on the top pairing. Mm-hmm. Or he's a guy who's like, you know, he's a solid defenseman, but he's never really lived up to like the promise that he was like the number three overall pick or something. He never really turned into a franchise guy, but he's not a guy that really scares me as much as what they had, even like Anton Strahlman back when they had him in that last series. And they have Eric Cernak on the second pairing. You know, maybe they can be beat better than they – is it Chernak? I don't know. Maybe that's a group that –
I learned it was Chernak this week.
Chernak. Maybe this is a group that they can work around, as opposed to last year when – or the 2 years ago when they got shut down. So, I mean, I don't know. What do you have a take on that group?
Yeah, I think Bogosian is not that great. I think you can outwork him, and I think that Shattenkirk is pretty cooked in my opinion. So I don't fear that necessarily as much. But McDonough is the guy that will make life hell for the Bergeron line if he's matched up against them. Just block shots. I mean, denies prime opportunities. He he's former Ranger captain. He was with the Rangers when Tortorella's running that team, really instilled right. a lot of defensive confidence into him.
Made a huge difference in the series 2 years ago. So that's what still worries me.
Yeah, so that's an issue that I'd be if I'm the Bruins, I'm a little bit worried about what he can do in a series. But I think I don't necessarily fear Bogosian. I think if he's given too much exposure on the top pairing over the course of a 7-game series, I think you can really make him look a little silly there. And I have to go back and rewatch how he performed in, cause he was, I believe he played in the, I want to say it was the second to last game before the pause, in Boston with Bruins and Lightning, pulling that up right now. He did play and they were outshot 8-5 when he was on the ice at 5-on-5. So, small sample, but again, it would indicate that if you have last change, you can get your opportunities against him.
Yeah, I don't love using the Corsi and things like that from a single game, unless it proves my take. I will use that. Otherwise, shut up, nerd! Sorry. They still have your guy, Blake Coleman, who I think you'd said before you would have liked if the Bruins got him. I don't know how big of a concern you think it would be having to defend him, but it sounds like it's going to have to be someone like DeBrusque, Bjork, Richie, or Kasha on him. So, I don't know. He had 16 minutes the other day against Washington, one shot on goal, no points. So, I mean, what do you think? You think he could be a threat? You think he could be someone who ruins it for the Bruins?
I think that whole bottom six is really underrated. Even guys like, you know, remember 2 years ago we were talking about it. Was it Anthony Cirelli? It was kind of like their pain in the ass they had to deal with.
Yeah. He had a really good series 2 years ago. He's their number two guy now.
Yeah, exactly. And he's moved up. And now you look at the bottom six now. And, you know, I think that they have, you have the lineup in front of you, right?
Yeah. It's the third line is Barkley Goodrow at left wing and Yanni Gourde at center with Coleman on the right.
And Gourde had a great he had a great season last year. You know, if he can find that again, that's a strong piece for them. Yeah, and that fourth line is Maroon, Stevens, and Paquette.
A bunch of lumbering beasts.
That's what I'm saying. Talk about shit stirrers.
Right, yeah, I'm worried Paquette's going to cadre someone.
Yeah, Paquette ended Rick Nash's career, basically. So, yeah. Their bottom six worries me more than their top six, if that makes any damn sense. It's because I've seen what the Bruins can do against their top line players. In 2018, they really did hold Kucherov at bay for the most part. It's the depth, though. Is can your second line beat their third and fourth? Can your third line beat their third and fourth? You know, that's what I wonder. That's what I wonder over the course of a series with the Bruins and Lightning.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, we got to see if the top line can get their shit together and start scoring. And Brad Marchand sort of said what we were saying in the postgame show, so pat on the back for you and I. And he said, we got to get back to, we got to simplify it and start outworking guys and be more aggressive and just outwork guys and try to make the simple plays, the fundamentals and all that stuff. So hopefully actually manifests itself on the ice, because talk is cheap.
And I thought Cassie had a great comment yesterday when he was talking about the lines and the combinations. He said, I'm not worried about that right now. He said, right now I just need the individuals to get their game together, and then we'll worry about the team and the lineups after that. He's like, but the players need to get themselves right before we talk about line combinations and whatnot.
Yep. Very true. Bruins tomorrow night, or tomorrow afternoon, really, 4:00. So get home early from work or turn off your Zoom conferences early, because it's going to be afternoon hockey. It's crazy that they've had hockey all day, like hockey nonstop. It's like you're at Bonnaroo and like you go from one stage to the next. Or it's like, here's a game in Toronto, game in Edmonton, game in Toronto, game in Edmonton. It's been pretty fun. I haven't been able to watch all of it. I mean, I've seen some of these people on Twitter. It's like, how the fuck, how do you guys have all this time to watch every hockey game? Maybe it's just because I'm interested. I have other interests other than hockey, but you know.
This is my fourth straight day of noon to 1 a.m. watching hockey, and I'm not tired of it yet. The only game.
Have you left your couch?
Yeah, the only series that I've kind of been bailing on is the Islanders-Panthers series. I haven't caught a ton of those games just because
that sounds awful.
I'm really not that interested in that series. and it's funny. I thought that the Jets-Flames series was going to be a dud. That's been very exciting. Those teams hate each other. And
I was gonna say that's been the most compelling series based on what's happened.
Exactly. So I've really enjoyed that one so far.
Not to kiss
the
next
one. There are games I've watched two periods or just one and gone from there.
Are these short series? Are they doing best of seven or is it like best of three, best of five?
These are best of five.
Best of five. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And it's pretty, you know, you got two teams now that are already up 2-0 in their series with the Hurricanes over the Rangers and the Islanders over the Panthers right now. And, you know, they have the best of seven, you know, when you go down 0-2. In NHL history, when you go down 0-2 in a best of five, the team that's been up 2-0 has won 55 out of 56 times. I mean, that's just crazy. So
wait, there's actually a history of best of? Is that what they used to do or something?
Yeah, they used to do it back in the day, back in the first round, I think, you know, years ago. I want to say the
like when we were the late babies. 80s. Okay.
Yeah, I think so. So because I think
they had the Campbell Conference and the Wales Conference.
somebody mentioned like before a game this week, they were like, and the first best of five series in the NHL playoffs in 30 years is underway or something like that. So that's how I knew that.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't love – I mean, I hope they don't think like, oh, this is cool. We better adopt this full time and start putting these basically bad teams in the playoffs. I hope it's just like this was the compromise for not being able to finish the regular season. We'll let one of the few shit teams, Canadians, into the playoffs and throw them a bone, give them a chance. So
I think that's all it was, because you had so many teams like the Rangers and the Wild who were making really strong pushes. The Jets are included in that group as well. Teams that were making really strong pushes and were so close to the playoffs that it'd feel weird if you didn't allow them in there.
But I mean,
it's also interesting to watch it though, because a lot of these teams that are the lower seeds are actually playing better than the higher seed right now.
I mean, that's sort of playoff hockey, if you ask me.
Exactly.
Like the more desperate, more hungry team can sometimes have the advantage over a higher seeded, more talented team. Which is sort of like how the Flyers have been playing lately. Like, I'm starting to think the Flyers might be able to pull the St. Louis Blues this year. They looked really good, I thought.
Oh yeah, they were trending that way right before.
Yeah, that's why I say it. Yeah.
Pause. Yeah, I mean that's a good team and. You know, that Couturier-Giroux combo, I mean, that's a really good line. And then you look at their defense, the way that's improved over the years. And Carter Hart, if he is indeed, you know, the guy, has ice water in his veins, that's a massive difference from where they have been in years past when they had Brian Elliott,
past.
Steve Mason. And yeah, I mean, you go back to the last great goaltender that team had, I would say, is probably who? Robert Esch? Back in the
Did they have Ilya Bryzgalov,
but he was terrible. That's what
he
I
was
like,
bad
like,
for them.
He was awful. He was terrible.
Yeah. The universe is like humongous big.
I think who's the last goaltender that they had that was like legitimately good?
Fucking, you know? Ron Hextall. I don't know.
I honestly land back in 04 with Robert Esch. That was the last guy I thought that. Oh, okay,
Robert
he's good.
Esch. I thought he was like a backup.
But he was their starter that year. And he had that 0-0-4 year, he had a pretty good season, if memory serves. But also, I mean, after that, it was Marty Biron. You know, he wasn't terrible, but he wasn't a difference maker. Yeah.
No.
And so they've had – it's just been a revolving door of guys. And they've always had a good offense in the postseason, but they've never had the goaltender. Now
they haven't had a goaltender since – haven't had a goalie since John LeClair was parking his – fat horse ass in front of the net and scored 90 goals that way. That's right. How bad the Flyers goaltending situation. All right. Well, anyway, back to the Bruins. Bruins play the Lightning tomorrow, 4 o'clock. We'll have full game coverage for you on 985thesportshub.com. Ty and I will do a post-game show. You'll get a post pre and post on right on the airwaves at 985thesportshub. Judd Sirott and Bob Beers calling the game remotely with the hell of a setup, which is someone said it, that it looks like Dexter in the studio we have set up with all the plastic crap going around. I have a feeling John Lithgow is going to bludgeon someone to death with the way it looks in that studio. But yeah, stay tuned. Watch the Bruins. Hopefully they play better. Hopefully the first line plays better, and hopefully we'll have a better result to talk about. Switching gears, I just want to get to this real quick. Did you hear about Derek Jeter and his latest press conference?
Oh, they're
basically scolding us for criticizing the Marlins players for going to a goddamn strip club and catching COVID.
No, they're getting milk. That's what he was, right?
We're going out for a milk.
Yeah. Everyone
didn't have any cookies, so he tried to blow off steam at the strip club. What's wrong with that? No, like you know, he said something like he was saying something like, "Oh, I hope the first question from you media pieces of shit has something sympathetic towards these guys. This is a deadly virus. Are you fucking kidding me, Derek Jeter? We're supposed to have sympathy for these guys for going to a strip club and causing a COVID outbreak. Basically, doing the one thing you're not supposed to do, which is be in an enclosed area for several hours, surrounded by filth." Spitting on each other, getting each other's droplets in your mouths, and then catching COVID. We're supposed to have sympathy for these guys.
Yes.
It's like, how are we supposed to feel bad for them when they obviously weren't that worried about the virus themselves? That's what I have to say to you, Derek Jeter. Go hit another bloop single to the opposite field in the World Series and keep getting all the credit for a team that had Bernie Williams, Jorge Posada, Roger Clemens, Mariano Rivera, and Andy Pettitte on it. I guess that's the narrative. Is the baseball fawning over Derek Jeter scolding us yet? Are they throwing rose petals at his feet? I just saw this press conference and I couldn't, as a Red Sox fan who hated Jeter growing up and broke my heart, I couldn't stand it.
Yeah, I just.
It's typical baseball, you know? That's just.
It's not believable. It's not believable. Right. It's not a believable story. And it's
going out for milk.
Yeah.
Was it poured down a stripper's ass? Is that what happened?
Probably. I've seen weirder things happen.
Yeah, I've seen some shit.
Hey, you like what you like, man. But yeah, it's just – the whole thing is hanging on by a thread. It just ended already. I don't even care. Like, I just don't. Like, it's – this product is not all that entertaining right now, especially when we have playoff hockey and basketball now. I don't need – I do not need baseball right now.
And the Red Sox are terrible.
If these guys are going to lie to me and just be like, "Oh, you're all getting milk," you know, just go away. I don't need this right now. I don't want this in my life.
I hope you have sympathy for us. We haven't had sympathy for anyone in baseball for months. The way you guys have handled the shit, so shut up on that.
Not only that, and you know, that's the other thing with baseball too, is that everything they do, even when they screw up, even when they do something that they shouldn't be doing, they turn around and go, "Well, you should empathize with us. You should feel bad for us." As if they're not, as if 45 million people are unemployed right now, and as if no one has been outside or to the beach in like 5 months.
Right.
Guys, we're doing this. Shut up. They're asking you to do one thing for 2 months, basically. Hey, get paid handsomely, even with a prorated salary. Just don't do this. Every other athlete can do it. Why can't you do it? And here we are. But no, we got to feel bad for them. You got to have sympathy for them right now. You know, nothing else is happening right now. Baseball players are the only people that are inconvenienced right now. They're the only ones. So you got to feel bad for them.
By far the most self-absorbed athletes in all sports, if you ask me. I just can't stand it. It's like they're completely blind to the improvements that their own sport needs to make. They get all cavalier about the virus and then expect us to feel bad for them. I do not. And I would say the same thing if I did it myself. I have gone to like bars and stuff. And if I ended up catching the virus, I wouldn't expect any sympathy. It's just ridiculous. I just wanted to get that off my chest. We don't have to talk baseball too much. That has been shitting on Derek Jeter, who was a great player, deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. Just a touch overrated. just a touch over it. Gets a little too much credit for those Yankees championships. He did have some players around him. That's
God,
all I wanted to say.
They compare him to Michael Jordan. It's unbelievable.
No, please. He's not. He has almost the same amount of rings, but baseball is the one sport where you can't say one guy can't do it by himself. It really is a collective of individuals. It's not like football where you need to have a quarterback. It's not like basketball where you need a superstar. It's not like hockey where you need like the goalie or the transcendent centerman or defenseman. It just doesn't work that way. Like the Angels haven't been good for like almost all of Mike Trout's career. Mike Trout is one of the best players of all time. So Fuck Derek Jeter. That's all I had to vent on that. I thought that was unbelievable. We'll switch gears again. I did want to get to the Patriots because they've had just an insane amount of players opting out, and obviously people are coming up with all their takes about it. We're still wondering if people are going to opt out, but I do think this is going to be the end of it. Everyone's speculating about the McCourties because they've been pretty outspoken about, you know, their concerns with it. He called the whole thing an absolute joke. But I think what Devin was saying on Sunday was in reaction to the NFL proposing to move the deadline up as opposed to moving it back, which they did. So I don't know. Maybe he feels differently about it now. But, you know, Devin spoke. I don't disagree with really anything he said about anything. And he was in the video of them on the practice field. So I really doubt the McCourties are going to go out on the practice field, have themselves be photographed and all that, and then opt out. So I think we've reached the end of the opt-outs. But obviously Dante Hightower is the one big, big one that I don't know how they're going to overcome this, because you look at the linebackers last year between him, Kyle Van Noy, Jamie Collins. They had a really, really good combination of experience and talent / skill / smarts. And, I mean, that's been gutted. I mean, I don't want to say that everybody left is a bum, because I still like Juwan Bentley. He hasn't really had the opportunity to show what he can do. And now he's their number one inside linebacker. He might have a chance to get the old green dot on his forehead and call plays for them in the middle. So, I mean, I want to see what he can do. He looked good early in his rookie year. You just watched him play and we're like, oh shit, they might have something here. But my concern there is that now they're entirely inexperienced, and Bill Belichick defenses are at their best when he has experienced guys who know each other, know how to play together. And you don't really have that when your linebackers are Juwan Bentley and the rookies they just drafted, Josh Uche and Anthony Jennings, who I like the picks, but I don't know. I just wonder if Bill, like we always say every year, when's Bill going to turn these guys loose? That's just not really how he does it. I feel like he might have to if they want to start making plays, because they're going to screw up if he expects them to just know everything, know the system inside and out, and be totally prepared for every situation. Like, you're going to have growing pains with the rookies. So I don't know. What do you have any thoughts on the Patriots?
Yeah, it's a lot of leadership that's lost on that defensive side of the ball after you've already lost Van Noy.
Yeah. And Chung Collins. Too.
Yeah. Chung. Yeah. I mean, and now Hightower and Chung are out as well. So that's a lot of pressure on this group now. But I do think, you know, with your point with Bentley, what was it, two or three preseasons ago, he was probably their best player in the preseason. And we all thought, okay, wow, there's something big happening here. And then I believe he had a knee injury or he had
torn his pectoral.
Okay. That's what it was. And he was done for the season before it even began. Yeah. So,
and then last year, like you're not going to crack that depth chart.
No.
So now's his real opportunities is this year.
Exactly. So, but I do think that it's, you know, they draft Jennings, they draft Josh Uche. I mean, that's, that maybe speaks to the fact that, you know, they realize what's in front of them and they're not going to run from it. So I want to see those guys. I actually do want to see those guys, you know, and I'll deal with the growing pains, because I think that the sooner you get them those actual plays, that actual time on the field, the quicker they will be, you know, who you need them to be to continue this run here in New England. So I like it. I'm excited. I remain excited for this team and just seeing what they look like, even with these opt-outs. You know, I do just, I want to know what they're going to bring to the table.
Yeah, that's the thing. You sort of said it. Bill's going to have to play these guys at some point. He can't have them marinate for a year like he usually likes to do with rookies. But they do have Brandon Copeland, a veteran former Jets linebacker. Now I think he's definitely going to make the team, and you're going to see a lot of him because he has the experience, and I think he's going to pick things up quicker than the young guys will. I think that the book on Uche is that he's athletic. He's got potential as a pass rusher, but he's a bit of a project, got to be molded a little bit. So I don't know how much we're really going to get out of him. Anthony Jennings, he's out of Alabama. He's got more of a pedigree. So maybe he's a guy that they could depend on as a rookie. So we'll see what happens with the linebackers. I'm not as worried about losing Patrick Chung because, I mean, you wrote about it on 98.5thesportshub.com. They did sign Adrian Phillips earlier this year, who's a similar player to Chung. And I think he could sort of play that role. And this is a former All-Pro. I mean, I think he was an All-Pro as a special teamer, but he did play some safety. And what I loved about him is just remember going back and watching the tape that he had a really good game in the Chargers playoff game against the Ravens and Lamar Jackson. He played really well. They played really well defensively against that offense. This is pre-MVP Lamar Jackson, so who knows? But I really like the Adrian Phillips signing. They still have obviously they still have McCourty. They signed Cody Davis, who's more of a special teams guy. But they still have pretty good depth there. They drafted Kyle Duggar, who's another rookie who's supremely athletic. So I don't know if they need to wait for him to emerge. I like what Terrence Brooks did for them. So I mean I'm not terribly worried about the safety. It's the linebackers that I think we got to worry about, and we'll see how that pans out. And we've seen before what happens when they had to go through a bit of a rebuilding on the fly. When they lost all those cornerstones of the early Patriots dynasty defense, when they had to rely on guys like Dane Fletcher, and you know, for a while, like Tully Bantekane was their best linebacker for a couple
Monty
of years.
Monty Beisel.
They have Monty Beisel. It's like Gary Guyton. Like they played okay at times, but like I think Chris Gasper makes this point all the time. He likes to harp on this. Love Chris Gasper. Just because they're playing decently in their roles doesn't mean like that they're that good. You know what I mean? Like just because they have to depend on these guys to be the number one guys doesn't mean that they suddenly have a good linebacking core. And I don't know. Hopefully the picks pan out quicker than usual, and you know, go from there.
I'll say this.
I'm just worried about who's going to come up with the big defensive play in the middle of the field. Or getting after the quarterback without Dante Hightower, someone else is gonna have to step up in that front seven. And the front seven was at its best in the playoffs when they had Dante Hightower and Trey Flowers was one of these guys. They need guys to step up now. They need guys to prove that like I can come up big in a big situation that we haven't seen yet. So you know, that's the uncertainty is what should have people concerned.
Yeah, and I would say this that. You brought up Phillips, and I think that's a good point. I think people are sleeping on him a little bit. Injured last year, but in 2018, expanded role with the Chargers. He had a career high in tackles, 77. Tackles for a loss, 4. An interception.
Good player.
And he had 9 passes. I hate saying defensed. I say defended because defensed is a silly word.
I hate it too.
I refuse to say it. But he also had a career high, 9 passes. Defended, not defensed. So,
Michael Hurley used to make me change it to pass defense. The great Michael Hurley used to make me change it to pass defense. He's like, that is technically the official term. I was like, fine.
Not doing it.
Okay.
Not doing it.
Okay. Pro Football Reference apparently counts interceptions as a pass is defensed, which I had mm-hmm. to – I literally emailed someone at Pro Football Reference, and they're like, I don't know. But it looked – oh, yeah, I think you're right. That was – Thanks. Thanks, Pro Football Reference. One of my favorite websites in the world.
Yeah, it is a good one. I remember the first time I went on to footballreference.com and it was all soccer and I went, what is happening? Am I having a stroke? It was really weird. you didn't have pro in there.
Right.
Footballreference.com.
I'm not even sure what that leads to. Hopefully it's not like a lemonparty.org situation or a meatspin.com situation. Can you confirm that for me?
I actually do not want to. You're
scared?
This isn't funny. Every time I try to access our shortcuts on my laptop, I'll go to analytics. Every time I type this in to my laptop, they think I want to Google anal fissures, which I definitely don't want to Google. It's like an autocomplete. It's like an auto suggestion from Google. Is that
yeah? But there's something in the there's something in the data that they suggested though. Oh, this guy eats a lot of candy and Mountain Dew. His asshole must be hurting. I think that's what they're thinking.
Maybe something like that. Yeah. Gotta be something like that. I don't know. but
it's
honestly
a product you might recommend for you. Anal bleach.
I'm like, nah, man, I just want to know how the page views did today, man.
I'm just going to the analytics. Analytics. It's like Arrested Development. I'm going to be the world's first analrapist. I'm an analyst combined with therapist. And type that word out and you'll see what I mean.
It's like in the new season, too. He's like, a new start. And everyone thinks Lysman says anus tart. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. It's great.
It's just oh, man. In fact.
I feel weird. Like, it's really bizarre to now have a reason to stay inside. You know, for 4 months, I was looking for reasons to stay inside, and now I have one, and it's been a weird adjustment. But I don't hate it right now. It's been nice. It's been nice. This Columbus team is legit. We're recording this as the game is going on, so if they lose, ignore me. But this Columbus team is not a team that I would want to play in the first round from the Bruins. So maybe that is what happens here with the Bruins getting the 4 seed, is that they fall out of playing a team like Columbus in the first round, and they go, you know what, we'll take our chance with Pittsburgh or Carolina instead. And maybe that works out for them. We'll see.
Oh, if they end up playing Carolina, I guess maybe they call that like failing upwards, so to speak. But I mean, it's not, they're not trying to lose. It's just, I don't know. I don't get trading like a tune-up. Try to win every game.
No, exactly. I'm saying that.
But I mean, I guess the home ice doesn't matter either.
It doesn't.
We're all on the same court.
I believe that the Bruins could beat the Islanders and the Hurricanes in the first round. I'm pretty confident in my belief that those are two teams that they match up well against. They have advantages over them in terms of, you know, various different things. Pittsburgh worries me because those games were run and gun, and if your offense isn't clicking, that's a dangerous, you know, situation you can find yourself in. Columbus scares me because look what they did to Tampa last year. Look what they did to you last year. It was a 6-game series that really required Tuca to be fantastic for the final 3 games of the series. But yeah, failing upwards, I mean, maybe a strong way of putting it, but if they could kind of,
I know it's just a buzzword. I don't mean,
but if they could suck their way out of playing Columbus or Toronto, or not Toronto, but Columbus in the first round, okay, maybe you're okay with not being the number 1 seed right now.
I can't do Toronto again. Can we have something different? Have Toronto lose to someone else?
I think the thing with Toronto too, that always worries me, is that a team will lose to you. They'll only lose to you so many times in a row before they finally get a punch back in. You know what I mean? Like look at the Bruins and Canadiens for years, right? The Bruins lost to Montreal and they finally beat them in 2009. It only happens so many times before they figure it out how to do it. And I'm not saying they would, but I'm just saying I'd rather not deal with that right now, just given everything else going on.
Yeah. And the other thing that I guess you got to wonder about going into this game, as always, number 40 is going to be back in the lineup. I don't know. Is that official?
Is Tuca gonna... Yes, he will.
Okay, that's official.
He's expected to start tomorrow. And we'll see how that goes.
Say this for, there's this one weirdo on Twitter. I think he follows us literally just to poo-poo our Bruins goaltending takes, like every time. Well, we'll just say that if it was Tuca. Yes. Tuca says he had a cough. He said in the app he has a cough. And then apparently the SWAT team descended on him and broke through his windows and then threw him on the ground, put a burlap sack around him and threw him in a carbonite chamber. Predictable takes. Felger, Maz, calling him Captain Poop and Pants or whatever the hell they called him. It's like he can't win. Tuca can't win in this situation because if he lies about the cough and then gets a bunch of people sick, it's gonna be like, well, what the hell are you doing, dude? Now the whole team's ruined. Now the playoff. Now you're jeopardizing everything with the Bruins, with the NHL. Like, you got to be more responsible in that. But now he's being honest and saying he has a cough, and it's like, oh, well, you're backing out of the game. You have the shits again. Like, what's going on there? So it's like Tuca's literally in a lose-lose situation the second he starts coughing there. And at the end of the day, I'd rather him be honest about thinking he has the virus than go out there. But the problem is now everybody knows, like, oh, I could just not report. I could just say I'm not feeling symptoms. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like when you try to watch a video or something on the internet and they're like, are you 21 plus years of age? You're 13. And you're like, yes. Like, I feel like that's all they have to do now. But Tuca absolutely has to be what he was in the first three series of last year's playoffs, or else he's gonna get killed. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't think it would be totally unjustified at this point. So what do you think?
Yeah, I would say that, first of all, going back to Sunday, if you're gonna criticize a guy for quote unquote bailing out of a game when he's in a league-mandated quarantine, you're an idiot. You're actively choosing to live your life as an idiot in the name of takes. You don't actually want to look at facts or reason or reality. You want a guy to play because of what happened in 2014 for Team Finland and what happened in 2016 in the final game of the regular season.
Game six against the Blackhawks.
Yeah, you want a guy to play through a sickness in the middle of a global pandemic just because you think he should. You think that your take, he needs to play because he's not tough enough. That's your whole thing. You're an idiot. You're an idiot if you're choosing to think like that right now. Not even a debate. But moving forward, yes, he has to be what he was in the regular season and last postseason, or this team is not going to go anywhere.
Especially he's probably going to win the Vezina, right?
I think Hellebuck's going to get it, but I think he's number two. Just think that team, the defense that Hellebuck played behind, was very poopy and very bad, and he had a great season. So I think that he's the guy, especially because the GM voted award as well. So I feel like the GM's kind of they're more aware of a team quality, so to speak, than most writers are. So I think that it's going to be him.
Yeah, I think everyone on the Bruins got hurt at awards time because the Bruins are such a good deep team, except Bergeron, who's gonna rename the Selke to the Bergeron Trophy.
He's gonna win his
fifth Selke.
but overall though, but with Tuca, yeah, he's got to do it. He's got to win it. You know, we've talked about it. I think he's a great goaltender. But me thinking that in the court of public opinion will not be justified until he wins the Stanley Cup. And right now he's got to do it. I think this is as good a time as any to do it. There's no crowd. There's no there's no travel. He's had some rest, fingers healed, he's out of quarantine. Like, let's go. This is the time to do it. So I hope that this is finally the time and it happens for him. Because if it doesn't, I don't know how many more chances you're going to get. I really don't.
At the end of the day, it's the cognitive dissonance that a lot of sports fans sort of fall victim to. Where it's like, you can't win the Stanley Cup with save percentage. You can't win the Stanley Cup with I have the best goals against average in the regular season. Like, you have to come up big in the big moments. It's an intangible thing that you can't exactly quantify. And the only way to quantify it is the number zero, which is the number of Stanley Cups that Tuukka Rask has won as the starting goaltender. So that is going to hang over him until he actually finishes the job. Whether it was his fault or not that the Bruins lost. I put him – Not very high on the list of why they lost to the St. Louis Blues last year.
So. No. And the way I phrase that is, could he have been better in Game 7? Yes.
Yeah.
So could 17 to 18 other players. You know,
like, everybody could have been better.
Their best player last year in that game was Joakim Nordstrom, which, not bad if you win, you know. But if you lose, that's pretty bad looking. And to that point, I wrote this after they lost in the Cup last year, is that Tuca could have been better in Game 7, but I'd like to think that he earned enough goodwill during that run to say, okay, you know what, team? Now it's your time to bail him out, because he bailed you out countless times throughout the first 23 games of the postseason. Now it's your turn. But that's not going to happen, to your point, yes, he needs to break that goose egg and be number one. I think I think both camps make good points. Despite what people think about me and how, you know, I defend the guy to death, I do think there are games where he needs to be better. I do think that. I just think that when we blame it all on one person and absolve, you know, the best line in hockey for not showing up, that's a problem to me. That's not consistent. That's not consistent enough for me.
You got to be consistent in commenting on what is happening in front of you. People get that distorted. We're like, we need to be consistent with how we feel about Tuca. You know, like, it's people saying, I'm being consistent because I always shit on Tuca. Like, that's just a fallacy. It's a logical fallacy. It's a bad argument. And, yeah, like, obviously there are games where he needs to be better. But at the end of the day, this is what I'm talking about. People would have blamed Tuca for that first Flyers goal the other night. They would have blamed that on Tuukka Rask. That's like, that's how distorted a lot of people's brains are with him. And, like, you could have blamed him on the third and fourth goals, which Halak, you know, Halak should have bailed them out on those. But I don't know. Tuukka can't win. Can't win in the court of public opinion. Can't wear a certain hat. But we'll leave that to the side because I like to stick to sports for the most part. I'm glad we don't have to talk about the virus too much anymore. Glad we don't have to talk about civil unrest and bullshit like that because I like to have fun, and we're continuing to have fun on this podcast.
Yeah.
Feel the same.
I do. And what I would say, too, about this is you know, when Halak has – if we're going to sit here and we're going to have this debate, right, as to who should be the starting goaltender, and people have their belief that Halak is just as good, if not better, than Rask, and he should be the starter. Okay, well then, when Halak gives up a goal 8 seconds after the Bruins make it a one-goal game, you got to criticize it. You got to say that's a stop you need. You can't say, "Well, this happened in neutral zone and this happened." No, 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 no. You've told me that he's just as good, if not better, than the guy that you crush for every goal he gives up. So maybe let's be a little consistent here and hold him to the same standard. If they're just as good as one another, that means that the salary doesn't matter. And the past doesn't matter because they are on the same footing. Yes? Okay, so let's hold them to that. But again, I've given up on this making sense a long time ago. And if Tuca sucks and they lose a game, it's his fault. If Halak sucks and lose a game, it's the team's fault. I know how this game works by now. And I don't even bother anymore. It's just, you know, maybe let's stop looking at this through the lens of black and white, that it's got to be one singular person's fault. And just say what I've said for years, by the way, that if a team loses, it's probably more than one guy's fault.
He was one shit show away from the Conn Smythe trophy and literally shutting everybody up. And then unfortunately couldn't stop Alex Pietrangelo, and that's basically it. And I forget who it was who fired it right through, right between his pads. For the Blues, fucking Blues. I wanted to like, you've seen my shirt before. I have like a vintage Minnesota North Stars t-shirt with Mike Modano's name on the back. I've wanted to get the same with the St. Louis Blues and Chris Pronger on the back, but now I can't. I feel like I'd be an asshole if I showed up in Boston wearing a fucking St. Louis Blues shirt, but their uniforms are way, way better than, you know, the hockey character of some of the guys on that team is what I would say.
Yeah, it sucks when a team has a great logo and you just can't wear it. It really does suck.
It's like, dude,
it's brutal.
The Blackhawks, like, too.
You know what's that matter? You know what's a great logo, but I will never be caught dead wearing their clothing, is the Vancouver Canucks have a great throwback set.
The throwback one, right? Just the generic green and black one, right? I like that logo, too.
There's that one, and then there's the one, the
at least they black, beat the Canucks.
The black, yellow, and red, the Pavel Bure, like those ones.
Oh, yeah,
fantastic as well. Big fan of their color scheme and their logos. And I would say the same about the Astros. Is that I love the Astros logo, but I can't wear that team anymore. What, are you out of your mind? I can't do that.
Right. Pavel Bure was the funniest player ever. I remember like one of the farthest back I can remember a Bruins game that I went to. I think he was on the Florida Panthers at the time, but. He would literally, like, he would look like a player in NHL whose controller was disconnected for, like, 95% of the game. But then there were just, like, two 12-second sequences where he stole the puck, went on a breakaway, and he's the fucking fastest skater ever, and just deked out Byron Defoe or whatever, and that scored two goals, and that's how they won. And it's like, If Felger and Maz were around back in Pavel Bure, they would absolutely shit on him because he doesn't do anything except get breakaways and score goals. But he was electrifying when he had the puck and literally nobody to have to beat on defense. So he was a fun player.
Yeah, I always love the electric Russians. I just love watching them play. There's just something about it. It's just different. Like that's, you know, growing up, I was a Kovalchuk fanboy, and I still love watching him play, even though he's 37 years old now and not nearly what he was in Atlanta. But I just, there's something about just like that, just that swagger of just an absolute just missile of a shot that just, I love it. That's why watching Pastrnak is so damn fun if you're a Bruins fan, because you've never had a guy who can shoot like that. You know what I mean? Like just that absolute bullet from the blue line on the power play. It was one of my absolute favorite things to watch. One of my favorite things to watch, and I'm curious what you think about this, is what's a random sports thing that you just love watching, whether it's a play, a sequence, anything? For me, I'm realizing I love watching a 5-on-3 power play. Oh, the movement, the spinning. Oh, just
there's so much open ice.
Oh, it's just fantastic. Oh, my God. Watching a 5-on-3 is like, I'm like, oh, there it is. There it is. Like, there's something just about it that it's a hype machine, right? It's just, you're waiting for to get that next level. And then boom, a goal or a great glove save. It's just something. It's just fantastic.
This might be relatively boring, but I like seeing it really in any sport. I like seeing a two-way player, like, make a dominant play at both ends of the court or the ice in one sequence. Like, you see it with Bergeron sometimes. You see it with Marcus Smart on the Celtics sometimes. He'll, like, block. He did it the other day, I think. He, like, blocked a shot and then went ran down and laid it in. I was like, that was fucking cool. He just took over the game for a second. And you can see that with, like, a defenseman sometimes. Make, like, a bone-crushing hit, fire the puck up ice, join the rush. That's what I like to see.
Yeah, I like that. I always like when a player – I like to your point, the team defense in basketball, a big stop and then like a pull up three. I'm like, oh, that's just great. Especially with like a playoff game at the Garden or just a nice crowd. It's like just the electricity is just fantastic.
Yeah, the 08 Celtics, that was one of the more fun playoff runs because they would, especially when they had Mike Gorman and Tommy Heinsohn on the game, that like, and they would just like an epic run in a playoff basketball game is like one of the more fun things. And you know, They're on like a 12-0 run and they pull for three. Get it. You know, I love to watch that shit. Reminiscing on the fun aspects of playoff sports. Haven't had much fun lately from Boston with the Patriots losing to the Titans and Bruins losing to the Blues, and then they don't look good to start this year. The Red Sox are just terrible. The Kyrie Irving Celtics shit the bed. It's you know, it's been a bad run. Echoing Derek Jeter, I just really hope that the first thing out of your mouth when talking to Boston fans is a little sympathy. You know, it's been really tough on us lately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We get back to the good shit with the Bruins coming up. You know?
I think so.
You think they win tomorrow? What do you think?
Geez, I don't know. That's a hard one to say because I think that their effort will be there. I don't know if the result will be there, but I think that you can expect their best effort to date, just given what's coming out of their camp from Cassidy and from some of their leaders stressing what needs to improve. I would expect a very strong push tomorrow, and we'll see how the lines all shake out. But
I'll go ahead and say they do win, and we get like a desperation sort of push from them. We might not see the period-to-period consistency like what we were talking about in the last post-game show, but maybe they explode in the first period, and that's all they need. You know, they go up 3-0 in the first, and then that's all she wrote. I do think we're shot at Ty's crotch there real quick.
Sorry.
We'll cut that part out. We'll cut that out. I do think we will see – the first line say do what Marchand is saying, and they will get the simplified things and just try to win puck battles and be aggressive and simplify their game and not try the fancy dipsy do stuff anymore. And I think that will work to their advantage. And I also think, and this is the one thing that Psycho on Twitter will act like this is the one thing I said about Tuukka the whole podcast. I think Tuukka Rask will have a big game tomorrow. I think he'll come up with some big saves. I think he's going to be locked in. I hope he knows that he needs to be better. And he needs to show up. So That's what my prediction. My prediction will be like a 3-1 win or something for the Bruins. It'll be like a 2-1 for the most part and then score an empty net. That'll be my prediction. So, yeah, we can leave it at that. Thanks for listening. If you made it this far, thanks. I love you. It's the Sports Hub Sidelines podcast. One last reminder, please rate and review us. 5 stars only, please. Ty, do you have any closing thoughts?
No.
All right, go get those anal fissures checked out. Thanks for listening. We'll have a Bruins post-game show for you tomorrow night. And otherwise, we'll talk to you again next week.
See ya.